Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
Coming up on the show today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. He says some markets had their best week since spring. Crude is going nowhere. Gold and silver are bouncing back, and copper has been the hottest metal the last few weeks, setting a record high. InsideTrackTrading.com president Eric Haddock examines the cycles governing the stock markets, crude, natural gas, platinum, palladium, the U.S. and Canadian dollars, and Bitcoin. He also points out copper is really on the upswing. Veteran trader Victor Adair joins us from Vancouver Island to comment on the stock markets and the performance of new Fed Chair Kevin Warsh. He also looks at the U.S. and Canadian dollars, the yen, and what the Iran war is doing to crude. Now, let's get into the show. My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Welcome back to the show. Ross, how would you describe what happened on the stock markets this week?
Well, this was a week we've been waiting for. We had some really good signals in more than just the stock market in the last little while. A week ago Friday, we got oversold signals in the NASDAQ and in the S&P. And on the NASDAQ, the signal that we had on the weekly charts was the first one of this variety since back in the April 1st low. And we know what happened out of that. That was a V bottom, and the market just continued to rally after that. We had a secondary signal again here just in the last week and a half. And that one has given us a move. Like in the NASDAQ, we've gone from 27,500 up to just around 30,000 in the span of 5 days. So pretty solid move on the upside there. The same type of thing in the S&P, new all-time highs as of Friday's close. And it's nice when you've been sitting around for the better part of 2.5 months, the market's going nowhere, and then you get some beautiful signals just before it takes off. And, you know, we sent out an email to everybody on Sunday night pointing that out. And here we are with one of the best moves that we've had this year.
What's happening with crude?
Crude oil, now there's one that's just gone quiet. It's backing and filling here. We're 77.23 right now. After the low in July at 65, had that good, like a 70% retracement rally up to 93, gave it all back to 77. So that's a 50% retracement, and it's just now boxing itself in. And I, you know, we'll just forget about the fundamental side of the equation because it changes too much week by week or day by day. We'll wait for some kind of signal to show up here. Right now, there's nothing to write home about. So you just sit back and some of the oily stocks, the Exxons, the Chevrons aren't doing too much. And even if we go over into Valero, which is into the refiners, that market topped out about 3 weeks ago at 320. We're back under 300 right now. So even the ones that had been the high flyers in the sector are starting to give up some ground.
What's happening with gold and silver?
Very happy with this. We had capitulation lows in silver and in gold back in the last week of June. And typically what happens is you get an initial bounce and a retest of support, and that's exactly what happened. So we rallied up to 4,200, backed off to 4,000 again, and that was as of the 29th. At that point, we now have sequential 13. So that's typically a sequential 9 happens when you get 9 consecutive bars closing below 4 days earlier. And then once that's in place, then you can start a whole new count. And when that count, if it manages to achieve a 13, you can be looking for a larger pattern and a larger corrective move. That's exactly what we've seen here. This week was a continuation now of the bull market in gold, and the typical reaction after that 13 is that you will have a multi-week rally, and I think this week was just a kickstart to that one. Over in silver, same type of action. It was a little slower getting off the mark, but pushed through 60 as of midweek, closed the week off at 63.5, so nice move in the silver market. The other metal we've been watching has been the copper. It has historically, it's been the strongest one in the last 3 or 4 months, and put in a new high this week, backed off a little bit at the end of the week, but that's a good looking pattern. It's strong cup and handle going back for the better part of 4 or 5 years right now, so breaking out here has got the potential to go a long way.
What's happening with the Canadian and U.S. currencies?
Well, the U.S. dollar topped, as we saw signals back here, June the 23rd, up around 101.5, retested that at the end of July, and then it gave up ground. So it's a topping pattern, and closed off the week at 99.5. A little bit oversold as we move into the tail end of this week, but overall, it's a topping pattern. It's what I can see in the dollar index. The Canadian dollar has improved quite well. We closed it to 71.95, and considering that the oil market is not giving it any leadership, that's a nice move for Canada at this point.
What's happening with Bitcoin?
Bitcoin, just a backing and filling process. We're at 64,900, stuck here now inside a, you know, a 5,000 point trading range since the early part of June. Nothing really in the way of guidance at this point. So, you know, we'll just sit back and let others trade the minute-by-minute action.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
Good to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. Find him on X at Charts by Ross. Coming up, Eric Haddock.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Eric Haddock, CEO and President of InsideTrackTrading.com. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Jim.
Can you tell us a bit about InsideTrack, spelled with two I's, and how our listeners can subscribe?
Yes, InsideTrack provides a technical and cyclical advisory service, primarily based on the futures markets, but it spans out into related cash markets, indexes, whatnot. But we have subscription-based publications that are available, and listeners can find out more information, see a lot of samples and some tutorials and whatnot at our website, InsideTrackTrading.com, and that's inside with the two I's in the middle, InsideIde, tracktrading.com.
The Dow spiked to new all-time highs this week along with the S&P 500. The NASDAQ spiked higher, but not quite to new highs. Are these spikes higher part of ongoing stock market cycles?
They certainly are, and what I've been looking for on an intermediate basis was a type of multi-month topping process that would be led by the NASDAQ 100, and it set its peak in early June and had to go through the first sequence of that topping process. There's a specific indicator that I look to kick in, which will tell you that the initial leg down is nearing completion. And that finally took place on July 24th, signaled that July 28th, 29th should be a low. And the markets triggered several 1 to 2 week buy signals at that time. my work was showing that we should see all of the indexes rally into August 10th, plus or minus one trading day. So that's where we are in the near to intermediate term. But depending on what the NASDAQ 100 does on the next couple of weekly closes, that could really reinforce this possibility that a broader topping process is unfolding.
Dow Jones transports have been moving higher after pulling back. How do the transports look ahead?
Transports tend to be a little bit of an outlier, and they, you know, march to the beat of their own drum. And since that extreme spike high a few months ago, and the quick resulting sell-off from there, they've really been trading more sideways, but they too have been rolling over a little to the downside. But I need to see more negative action before I would say that a downward reversal has taken place.
Crude oil volatility. With the on-again, off-again wars, is crude oil able to stay within its cycle?
Well, I think crude is definitely staying within its cycles. As you mentioned, there's a lot of sharp volatility within those cycles. But back when I was first talking about a major surge in crude back in December of last year, there were multiple cycle progressions that were really portending that, but one of the most consistent was an 8-month cycle progression and its kind of half cycle or midpoint 4-month. That indicated a secondary low in mid-April and was forecasting a future intermediate low in mid to late August, which is still what I'm looking at. On the flip side of that, you had unleaded gas and heating oil with some multi-year cycle progressions. One of the most consistent was a 4-year cycle in unleaded gas, saying that the rally before that mid to late August cycle low, the rally could extend in the products into July, which is what we saw. So you've had those energy markets certainly adhering to the cycles, but in a very wild and volatile fashion. There's a couple of indicators and price targets that I need to see crude trigger over the next couple weeks to tell me if it is getting ready for a significant pullback low and the onset of a new rally, but that's going to hinge pretty significantly on what happens in the first half of August.
Natural gas looks to be in a trading range. Is the natural gas cycle likely to remain in a trading range?
The overall cycle is certainly been negative. One of the things I watched was looking for an intervening peak in January of this year and then another intervening peak in March, April. But we have just completed some pretty significant timing projections dropping into late July, early August, and I'm looking for the start of an uptrend, but doesn't necessarily mean it's going to all of a sudden catapult higher. But the next significant peak, I don't expect until November.
Could the gold bull market be resuming?
I have been saying all along that I thought the correction in all of the metals since their late January peak was an ABC correction, you know, so it has more corrective characteristics as opposed to impulse wave characteristics. Impulse is in the direction of the primary trend, correction is against the primary trend. And you had a number of weekly and monthly timing factors pinpointing July as the ideal time for an intervening low between that late January peak and a future peak that's expected in late October, early November. And so just in the last 2 weeks of July, gold, silver, then platinum and palladium, even copper, all generated some intermediate buy signals in my work. And we had published these trading strategies back in late July, and all of my work was saying to look for an August surge in the metals. So that's kind of the outlet coming into this month and what's expected in the coming weeks and even the next 2 to 3 months where the metals are concerned.
Could the silver bull market be resuming?
Yes, I think that silver is right along there with it. Right now, you've got gold leading the way a little bit, and I think that's on a couple of indications that inflation fears might be diminishing just slightly as we get more and more talk about something happening in the Middle East that would bring down the price of oil. And as you get a couple other factors starting to look just slightly less inflationary than they have been, and as I've pointed out many times, that gold does not move in lockstep with inflation, even though you still hear so many in the media and whatnot linking the two together, there is a more of a lead and lagging type of relationship between the two. And when inflationary fears are the highest, that's when gold tends to suffer, because the corresponding fear with the inflation fears is that interest rates will need to be raised. And that is not good for gold, a non-yielding vehicle. So now that we have some of those inflationary fears, like I said, just slightly coming off of their worst point, you're freeing up some pent-up buying demand in gold. And this also is coming right after the latest move by China to become that much more involved in the pricing of gold. And the events that took place over the last few weeks, giving them more influence, or at least attempting to gain more influence and power over the pricing of gold, and how they have restricted certain buying while encouraging other buying. It's the fundamentals are kicking in at the same time that technicals and cycles had been saying to look for that July low. And I think that you're going to see silver and the other white metals catch up and perhaps even overtake the initial rally that we're seeing in gold.
Platinum and palladium spiked higher this week. What do you see ahead for the white metals?
I think that they're all moving in close lockstep, but there are some trend indicators, particularly in silver, but also to a lesser extent in platinum, that are showing that they have a slightly more positive wave structure and technical trend structure, even than gold. But that just really impacts the proportion or extent of a move up. It doesn't mean that any of them are going to move differently than the others. So I am still looking for all of them to see this August through October rally that I've been writing about for the last few months.
What's going on with copper?
Copper is really, in some respects, leading the way, only because it held up much better during the corrective phase. And you're going to keep coming back to the AI and tech demand for copper and the white metals and critical minerals. I think that that is not going anywhere, so you get your ebb and flow within that uptrending move. But my work has been showing all year that we would see really two significant moves up and subsequent peaks in copper. One of them is in the third quarter of this year. Another one is out farther on the horizon, but I do think that we're in the midst of that and that copper could see a surge to new highs. I'm looking at that $7 level as a intermediate objective, but it could spike into a significant peak in August or September. But I think that it's going to remain at higher levels for the foreseeable future.
The U.S. dollar has had a significant pullback in the last few days. Is this why the stock markets and commodities are moving higher, and where is the U.S. dollar in its cycle?
Well, I certainly think there is a interconnection to some degree. But it's almost never a one-to-one correlation that you see with those markets. I think what I was just mentioning about that slight alleviation of inflationary pressures, when coming through the latest Fed meeting, that you've had traders start to tone down their fears of an imminent interest rate hike, even just in recent days with some of the data that's coming out. Suddenly there's some talk that, okay, this September rate hike that some of them were talking about is becoming a little less likely. And when you get that type of pullback from the inflationary expectations, it's almost the same as interest rates dropping where the markets are concerned, because they are so contingent on expectations, not even the realization. So as you have those expectations for another interest rate hike start to moderate a bit, then the dollar starts to lose a little bit of what was driving it higher. And then you have gold and other metals moving higher, not just because the dollar is going down, but because of that interest rate perception change. So it definitely is all correlated, but I would never recommend trying to trade one-to-one correlation off of any of that type of news.
Since early July, the Canadian dollar has been in an uptrend. Can the Canadian dollar continue to climb higher from here?
Canadian dollar has been in a multi-month trading range. It is showing, as you point out, some signs of a little bit more strength or uptrending over the last few months, but I don't see any big moves in the near term.
Bitcoin doesn't seem to be moving higher with the stock markets and commodities. Are you a bull or bear when it comes to Bitcoin?
Bitcoin, I still have my three time frames that I thought would provide successive lower lows in Bitcoin in 2026. The first one was in February. The second time frame was in May, June. Third time frame is out in October, November. There are some weekly cycle progressions that are starting to hone that to a more specific time frame. But we are currently in between that second and third cycle low, and I could see still a little bit more rebound out of cryptos here in the first half of August. But on the whole, my work still shows that that Bitcoin could see lower lows even within this year.
What's happening in the bond market?
Bonds have started to rebound, again, on that same perception that that inflation is not quite as bad, at least in the coming weeks and months, and that the threat of higher interest rates is at least moderated to a little bit more neutral standing. And so you've had bonds start to rebound here in the first couple of days of the month, but I need to see bonds and notes give daily closes above the August 3rd through 5th trading range on any day after August 5th in order to signal that the intra-month trend has turned up. That's a little bit more of a 2 to 3 week trend. And in this particular circumstance, it would also turn two other short to intermediate trending indicators I use positive. So a close above yesterday's highs would be what's needed to really indicate that this bottom is something that could hold for a little while. And I do think that you're going to see bonds and notes start to move higher. Again, not on a rapid acceleration higher, but just holding their lows and starting to trend a little bit to the upside. And that could even extend into late year. But the first couple weeks of that uptrend should give a lot of clues about what to expect moving forward.
What do the agricultural cycles see ahead for food price inflation?
Well, I had all the grains that I watch spike higher into late July, and they reached some extreme levels, which told me they should be setting 1 to 2 month peaks, but that doesn't mean it's an all-out downtrend from there. It just means that they're kind of accelerating into an initial high and that then they need to pull back and kind of plateau a bit before preparing for additional upside. But in at least in the grains, some of my work is still showing higher highs out on the horizon. But your other commodities are mixed, whether you're looking at livestock, softs, or some of the other commodities. My overall view of something like the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index is looking for a secondary low, a higher low in the second half of August. So that would tell you we could see some downward action between now and then, but then a low and a subsequent rally come after that time frame. So I do think that there is another round of commodity inflation out on the horizon, but it's still a little bit out there right now.
Eric, anything else you think we should be taking a close look at right now?
No, I think that actually addresses the majority of the markets and market complexes that I'm focused on. So I think that's a pretty good synopsis.
Eric, thank you so much for being on the show. And where can our listeners subscribe to Inside Track, spelled with two I's?
Again, they can go to our website at InsideTrackTrading.com. As you mentioned, it's inside with two I's in the middle, so it's InsideTrackTrading.com.
Thank you again, Eric.
Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Eric Haddock, CEO and President of InsideTrackTrading.com. Coming up, Victor Adair.
This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Victor Adair, recently retired from nearly 50 years of being in the brokerage business in British Columbia, but still very active in the markets. He's speaking to us from beautiful Parksville on Vancouver Island. His website, victoradair.ca. Welcome back to the show.
Well, Jim, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
Several leading stock indices reached new record highs this week, but not the NASDAQ 100, which is slowly recovering from an 18% drop from June highs to July lows. What are your thoughts on the stock market?
Well, it's volatile, I mean, for a start, but I'll tell you what, we had a real rough period in the tech stocks sort of in the middle of July. There was some very aggressive rotation, and the NASDAQ had run up more than the S&P and fell more than the S&P. You just mentioned the S&P was down about 18% from the highs in June to the lows in July. The S&P was down about 2.5%. So a lot of the action there, to cut to the chase, we had people not only in North America, but certainly also in Korea and in Asia, that really were piling on to the rally in memory stocks in particular, but let's call it just tech. And aggressive retail participation. At one point, I saw a note that one-third of the adult population in Korea was estimated to have received a margin call from the broker. And I think the population in Korea is around 50 million people altogether, so you can imagine it was a lot of margin calls. Whatever. I think I talked about the market being over-leveraged. Concentration was intense, and then there was this rotation, buying one stock, selling another one, and swinging things around. Anyway, it seemed to all come to a head last week. And I should point out that decline of 18% in the course of a month, half of that happened in the 6 days leading up to Wednesday of last week. And the I'm calling it the defining moment was when the the hedge fund run by a young fella, the hedge fund was called Situational Awareness. And he was a bit of a somebody in the whole AI game. He had written a paper about that with that name, Situational Awareness. And people just threw billions of dollars at him. And, you know, he was 24 and really hadn't had much trading experience at all. And just got very highly levered in a couple of handfuls of flamboyant tech stocks, and saw the assets of his hedge fund just skyrocket and then just turn on a dime and go the other way. So the defining moment came Wednesday of last week, Wednesday evening, Thursday morning, when Citadel announced that they had basically bought all of the remaining publicly traded shares in the hedge fund and put a bottom to the margin call selling that was happening with this hedge fund, and also it seems that other hedge funds had picked up that somebody was in trouble, so they were pressing the short side as well. Anyway, we made the lows on Wednesday and then just bounced back aggressively since then. One of the reports I saw said that last week retail buying was the most aggressive ever, and then on this week, Tuesday, we had the most retail call buying in the option markets ever. So we had a dramatic swing. At the end of it all, making new highs, the S&P, the Dow Jones, the Industrial Index, the Russell 2000, the Toronto Stock Exchange, which isn't, you know, famous for being heavy in stocks, but heavy in tech stocks, and also the Euro Stocks 50 Index, and that's sort of a European version of the Dow Jones. The NASDAQ didn't make new highs. We've had a very volatile, choppy period here. It's August, it's summertime, and probably we'll get more August as we go closer to Labor Day. And I say that, Jimmy, because for years I've noticed that, you know, the market kind of gets real, as it were, after we get through Labor Day. So that's a ways away. The last day of the week here, Friday, everybody was waiting for the employment report first thing Friday morning, and I think within a couple of hours, you could just see like the volumes and volatility and prices just stopped, as I think people were saying, the hell with it, man. Let's head out and take a long weekend. Anyway, been a choppy period of time here in the stock market, and we have the leading indices here all at new all-time highs this week.
Kevin Warsh took over as the new Fed chair in May, but some people are not happy with his performance. What do you think?
Well, I'm not one to judge. God knows, there's probably some things he has to pay attention to and consider that other people don't even know exist. Let's say that. I think some people obviously felt that he should have raised interest rates at the first meeting where he presided as Fed chair, and the FOMC meeting did not raise rates. The reason to raise rates was, inflation seemed to be starting to perk up again, tied to perhaps, most likely, rising petroleum and petroleum product prices. And yet, clearly with the employment data that we had this week, he got a reprieve. I don't know. And then, of course, he's Trump's guy, so maybe, and Trump always wants interest rates to be lowered. Jimmy, I'm just not going to make a judgment on that. I trade the markets as I see them, as it were. I look at the price action. I don't try to pretend that I've got a crystal ball to figure out what the Fed chairman is thinking. He's clearly, here's something that seems clear. I think he is looking at the Fed and seeing that it needs to be updated, let's say, given a new look, if you want to be polite. That, the Fed's target for inflation has been 2% for the last 5 years, and they have never really been there. So, if they're not doing what they say they should be doing, then maybe they should change. So I think that some folks are expecting that he is going to change things. And there's one last thing I'll leave you with, and that is, historically, a new Fed chairman gets tested. Like, something happens in the markets, and, whether the stock market takes a hard break or, something happens. And we haven't really seen that yet, so I expect at some point we will move. We will see, the true nature of the man, I guess.
The Japanese yen jumped last week on intervention from both Japanese and American authorities. It seems to have sustained its gains this week. Have we seen an end to the 14-year decline in the yen?
I think we might have. And I've been writing about the yen in my trading desk notes a lot, I guess, over the past year. The yen is one of the, call it the three major currencies in the world, the euro, well, let's keep the Brits in the pile, four currencies, the euro, the UK pound, the British pound, the US dollar, and the yen. It's fallen 50%, more than 50% against the US dollar from all-time highs at the end of 2011, the beginning of 2012, but that's a hell of a tumble. And you hear it anecdotally. North American tourists go to Japan and say, "Wow, it's really cheap here. The food's great, everybody's polite, and it's cheap." So there's that. But they've had a problem. For years, the Bank of Japan has kept their foot on the neck of the bond market, as I call it. Like, they at one time owned over half of all of the Japanese government bonds that had been issued. And what they're trying to do is keep interest rates down. The fiscal deficit is huge by comparison with Canada and the United States. And it seems as though the new government, and Takahashi, she's got a super majority, so she can do whatever she wants, basically. is intent on spending, you know, increasing the deficit spending to try to stimulate the economy. So in that environment, it's like the yen was the safety valve or the escape route or whatever. So, I mean, something had to take the pressure, and it was the yen. So we had the yen down and down and down. Now, Trump has, since for years, for decade, I guess, or more, has thought that the United States dollar was too high relative to particularly Asian currencies, and he could see that the Asian currencies were keeping their currencies low so they could export like crazy, you know, into the American market and into the rest of the world. So it was a mercantilist policy. And that's great for the Asians, but not so great for the people on the other end of it. And Trump's been saying, you know, he wants to address that. So anyway, the yen was down and down and down, and it looked like it just, it, you know, couldn't get up. We saw some terrific intervention by the Japanese in July of 24, caused the yen to rally, I don't know, about 10%. But within a few months, it was back down to where it had been and then went lower again. We've had more bouts of intervention since July of 24, same result. The yen will pop up for a while, but then it gets back, makes new lows. This time, you know, with the Americans being involved and with the yen being so low, it may have actually made a turn. We'll see. It has risen from the lowest it's ever been. You know, will that be the defining low? Nobody knows for sure, but I could see it. Because I think maybe this time, everybody, that's going to be the Americans and the Japanese, realize that it's just not a good thing to have the yen keep going lower, and they need to do what they need to do to change that. And the biggest thing, and I'll wrap this up, the biggest thing on that would be if some of the money that Japanese people and Japanese institutions have invested outside of Japan starts coming back to Japan. People saw there was no real opportunities in Japan. Obviously there were, but people saw better opportunities outside of Japan, and there was like a tidal wave of capital left Japan, and that was one of the things that also put pressure on the yen. If some of that money starts coming back, in other words, people switch out of dollars and into yen, that'll help to turn the yen higher. And the thing will be, will people that have invested overseas think that, okay, this is as good as it gets in terms of the yen cross rate with the other currencies, and, you know, things aren't looking too bad here, there's some opportunities, maybe I'll start to bring money home. And if that happens, then I think we will have seen the low last week in the Japanese yen.
The Canadian dollar jumped to nearly a two-month high this week. Was that related to the strong Canadian employment report on Friday, which said 75,000 more Canadians were employed? Meanwhile, in the U.S., 23,000 lost jobs.
Yeah, when you just kind of see that headline, you think that's pretty spectacular. Now, I'll start with, I don't think the authorities on either side of the border are able to count really how many people are working or not, and so on. I mean, I had to look this up the other day, and there are about 160 million people in the U.S. who are working. So, you know, if 100,000 of them quit their job or stop working or something, does that really show up on the meter? You know, 100,000 worth relative to 160 million? So, and in Canada, Stats Canada, God bless them, I mean, they have had a history of... You know, they kind of swing from pillar to post. And I don't blame them. I think it's impossible to do that kind of counting. But they're told to do it, so they go out and do it. No, I think the more important thing is that I'll start the other way around. One of the things, maybe the most important thing that's put the pressure on the Canadian dollar is that you can get more for your money by investing in the United States, particularly with short-term interest rates. It's been running around 140 to 150 basis points premium to be invested in a U.S. two-year treasury bond instead of a Canadian two-year treasury bond, for instance. And when that carries on over time, people, you know, money moves. Money goes where it's loved or whatever the term is. And that has been a drag on the Canadian dollar. Now, there's something else that's a little more opaque, but we can see with some of the analysis we have in the currency markets anyway, currency futures markets, you know, how speculators are positioned. And I can tell you that building here over the last 6 months or so, maybe not quite that long, but anyway, the speculative position short the Canadian dollar in the futures markets in Chicago has virtually never been as high as it was coming into this week. So when the Canadian dollar starts to rally, those shorts are losing money. What do? They say, okay, let's cover that short position, become buyers. So there's a setup here, as it were, that if we can get a compression on that interest rate premium, and we're getting that modestly, then some of those shorts start to cover. And the people that are short, believe me, they know there's a lot of people short, and they don't want to be the last guy to get out. So I think a combination of those things has helped the Canadian dollar rally here. Now, it's not up huge. I mean, we're up to about, 72 cents or so. So we're up maybe a penny and a half from the lows we had about 2 months ago.
Gold and silver prices jumped this week. Why did that happen? And do you see the rally continuing?
I've traded gold for over 50 years. I feel I know something about gold, and then at other times I realize that I know very little. Let me tell you, and I'm not just trying to be a humble smartass. There is so much to know. But the gold market had a spectacular run to all-time highs in January of this year, where we get up to $5,500, something like that, if memory serves. I think we got way, way overdone at those levels, and we have had a substantial correction, came down to around $4,000. For the past couple of months, the market has traded sideways, broadly speaking, in about a $200 range. It seemed to me, and I wrote this in my notes, that as much as we've had this, I'm going to call it an over-leveraged liquidation, that the market was finding support somewhere just below $4,000 an ounce. And that didn't mean it was a good buy. It just seemed like, you know, okay, this found some support there. And then when you looked at why the dollar, the gold was down, certainly the decline from being bid up too aggressively, there was positioning there. But lately, you know, the U.S. dollar was stronger, interest rates were higher, and people thought they were going to rise and selling, and so on. But all of that, let's set aside, the market seemed to be finding some support just below 4,000. And then, as things have turned here the past couple of weeks with the U.S. dollar weakening, interest rates weakening, let's say, and also we're seeing reports that central banks are still in there buying. I mean, these are reserve management buys, not guys trying to, you know, pick a top and be a seller next week. You know, this is people buying gold and they're putting it away in the basement. It's going to stay there for a long time. So that's been a constant bid in the market, but it also seemed as though that diminished when the market had run up to the highs in January, and now maybe they're back. Whatever, you know, that's what's happening with gold. Does it continue from here? I have been of the view, and I know this isn't popular with the folks who are, let's say, gold bugs, that it's going to take a long time before we ever get above the highs we made in January of this year. Now, other folks clearly have a different view on that. Some people think this is just a little correction and, you know, we'll be at $10,000 sometime in the next couple of years. Could be. I don't trade those kind of time frames. I'm much shorter than that in my time frame, but certainly the best I could say, what I could say for sure is it seems as though we found some support just below 4,000. So if you're wanting to be a buyer here as a speculator, you got to think if the market trades down to 3,600 or something, you know, you're wrong.
Since the start of the Iran war, traders and investors seem very focused on changes in the price of crude oil. But this week, it seems less important. Do you agree?
Yeah. Yes, it really has. Now, there's a bit of a setup here, and that involves Trump. At the end of last week, the crude oil closed right on the high for the week because Trump was saying, we're going to hit them real hard over the weekend because these guys, you know, aren't doing what they said they would do or what I want them to do or whatever. That was, you know, if you are trading in crude oil, you don't want to be short going into a weekend where the president said he's going to hit Iran very hard. So the market closed right on its highs. At this week's lows, we were down $12 from those highs because it seemed as though, you know, once again, that there were some negotiations going on that might cause the conflict to end or wind down, or, you know, we can come to some sort of an agreement to do something. Maybe more crude oil would be able to, and other products, be able to exit the Strait of Hormuz without getting shot at. And then at the very end of the week here, late on Friday, I see more comments from Treasury Secretary Bessent to the effect that their negotiations are going on, even though some of the folks in Iran say there are no negotiations going on with the state. You know, with all of that, I don't blame people for saying, you know, it's on, it's off, there's other things to do. I think to go back to your question about why crude oil, I mean, I would say in March, you know, crude oil was absolutely the center of the universe for all of the financial markets. What's crude doing, you know, relative to the dollar, relative to the bonds, relative to the stock market? And this week it was like, it's, you have no idea what's going on, and it just wasn't that important. So it got, you know, relegated to page 48 instead of the front page headlines.
According to your weekly trading desk notes, you lost money in your short-term trading account in July. We both know that all traders have losing months from time to time, but how do you deal with that? Do I owe you drinks next time?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. I did put that in my trading desk notes. And for folks that don't know this or don't read the notes, every week I talk about markets, but I also talk about what I did or what positions I have on at the moment. And this is not investment advice. This is just what I'm doing. And I did say, you know, I struggled in July. Now, I didn't blow up. I likely will never blow up because I'm just very, very cautious with the risk I take, and I'm very quick to say this isn't working. But, I said, you know, when you're cold, you're cold. And historically, I know that I have had more losing trades than winning trades. I don't really pretend that I can tell the future, you know, the great fortune teller. So I make allowances for that. I put a trade in. I'll have a process. I mean, I'll do my analysis and try to develop, I would call it a bias. Do I think this market's more likely to go up or go down? Or, you know, I'm looking at it, it's just too confusing. I don't see that there's anything I want to do here, whatever. But if I develop a bias and I think, you know, I'm going to watch and see if there's an opportunity to buy this market because I think it's more likely to go up and down. So then what does an opportunity look like? It looks like I can enter a market where I've got chances of, say, you know, making $10 where I'm going to maybe risk $2 or $3. So I think, okay, that's a good asymmetrical risk-reward ratio, and I'll put a trade on knowing full well that 50%, more than 50% of the time, I'm going to lose money. So I'm going to lose the $3. I almost always use stops. In other words, I say I've defined a point, a price point on the chart, or like a condition. Like if somebody, I'm thinking somebody's going to say something, and if they say something different, then that blows my thesis out of the water, then I'm out of the trade. So and by the way, I should say, I have very little patience with a losing trade. If the trade's not working, you just, you know, I want to be out of it. So risk management is the number one thing for me. My analysis is usually a longer time frame than my trading time frame, and then the risk management time frame is even shorter. So how do I deal with it? It's no big deal. You know, I lose money, and you just try to keep the losses small. The thing, I guess, Jimmy, I really want to avoid is ever taking a big loss. I don't mind taking little losses. If I've taken a big loss, that means I've just obviously gone wacko for some reason or other. And so far, thankfully, knock on wood, that hasn't happened. So, and then, you know, that was July, and August is a new month, and so far I'm off to a good start in August. I'm positioned long in the Canadian dollar. It's going up, and I like that. So, you know, it's just a process. You win some, you lose some, you just keep grinding.
Victor, thank you so much for being on the show.
Jim, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for having me on.
My guest has been Victor Adair. He was speaking to us from Vancouver Island. His website, victoradair.ca. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Eric Haddock, and Victor Adair. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for any of our guests, you can send the questions to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.